Dancing in the apocalypse!
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle!
I know what some of your big city no-bra-wearing hairy-legged women livers might say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 201 of Maximum Film, baby! We are in here. It's your host, Ify Wadiway, in the booth with my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself. We're getting out of Christmas in July season and heading straight towards actual Christmas at light speed. Alonzo Duralde, what's good?
Oh, Ify, we've got plenty of July left. I don't know what you're talking about. what's good with me is just that, you know, every so often you get a reminder that you can always learn something about a subject that you thought you kind of had covered, or about, you know, just things that you enjoy in your life. I'm about to get super, like, honky nerd film guy here, so just bear with me. So, in the 1960 New Wave classic Breathless, the character played by Jean-Paul Belmondo uses a pseudonym of Laszlo Kovacs. Now, it turns out later we would get a great cinematographer named Laszlo Kovacs, and I always figured, oh, this is Godard being like doing little shout-outs to his film friends. But no, I was wrong. Laszlo Kovacs wasn't famous yet. He was just getting his career started in 1960. The reason that Belmondo's character uses the pseudonym Laszlo Kovacs in that movie is because he had been in another film the year previous for Claude Chabrol playing a character named Laszlo Kovacs. So it is a movie inside joke, but it's not the movie inside joke that I thought it was. And I'm like, you know what? I learned a thing today.
That's a today I learned.
Yeah.
A Yeah.
That's a real one. Yeah. I will try and repeat that later and I will confuse at least two of those names. I will be like, okay, so you know, in the movie Breathless, and then from there, I'll just like take a hard turn into Gene Seberg and then go all wrong.
Suddenly we'll be at Richard Gere. I don't know why.
I'll be like, oh, so there's a DP, right? And he has a name, and that name. Yeah. Good stuff. I'm excited for you. There's still stuff for this old dog to learn.
That's right. Some new tricks.
I love it. Oh, well, you know, something that that just always lights my heart up is the chance to call this woman the queen of the Midwest, which she is indisputably. And if you want to contest that, you don't fight her, you fight me. So good luck. It's Drea Clark. What's good?
Thank you. Thank you, Ify. You guys did all just give me demerits for being a Midwesterner who admitted that she didn't own any plaid. But I still appreciate your
good
support.
Good save with the gingham.
Yes, I do. I do have a full gingham dress, so I'll wear that instead. I had a different what's good, but for whatever reason, before we started taping, I brought up the fact that years ago, I worked on a single reality show, and that reality show involved me going on tour with both Tommy Lee and Ludacris for 3 months. And so truly what's good for me is the faces you guys just gave me for 5 minutes as I tried to explain a little of the show that was seen by no one, is available nowhere. And every time I talk about it, it sounds like I'm making it up. Yes.
That you've been sitting on this treasure chest of anecdotes and life experience. And we're only just now, after 200 episodes, we're only just now hearing about
it. Now, I want you to remember this. The next time that I am called a name dropper, I just please know the heavy volumes of names that I carry silently.
Yet to be dropped.
They are ready.
They'll be dropped. The drop.
Yes.
Locked and loaded.
But just like, I like to sprinkle them like I'm going into a forest and that's how I'm going to find my way out. That's how I drop names.
I don't do it
just because I'm like there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Ify, what's good?
Oh, yes. What's good? I got so much what's good. I'm almost like boiling over. But I think this one is pertinent to our very own Drea Clark. I'm slowly working my way up to a pontoon, but I started with kayaking in the Hudson River this 4th of July. I was, back in Hastings with the GF, and it was real great because she was like, oh, do you want to, like, go kayaking? I was like, sure. And we're kind of paddling out as at first, and she was like, so have you ever been kayaking? And as I swerve off towards some rocks, I was like, nope.
I love this so much.
And, so I was kayaking. I eventually get the hang of it, but I remember the, like, because it was a kayak tour of like the Bannerman like area up there, and it was real cool, this old castle. And the tour guy was like, you know, I before this morning, I would have been able to tell you we went a whole year without anyone falling in, but just this morning, someone fell in. But you know what? We're gonna be all good. And I was like, okay, I don't want to fall in. That's my only goal, is to not fall in, especially because I was not prepared to fall in, because I I'd never been kayaking before, so I'm just in like my fashion sweat, some sneakers, and a shirt, and she mentioned she was like, they said wear bathing suits, and I was like, I should be fine. So we're going, and we're like basically in the middle of the Hudson, and I'm like paddling, and I come up against this guy, and I don't want to hit him with my oar, so I raise my arms, but upon raising my arms, I shifted all my weight to one butt cheek, and before you know it, I'm in the water, and so I immediately go into survival mode, and I was like, okay, I gotta go, and I'm paddling, and I'm remembering stuff I learned from my high school, water polo team. I'm doing egg beaters. I was like, I gotta stay up. I gotta survive. I'm wearing a life vest, so I could have just stayed still, but I was like, I gotta put my work in. And then after like that quick 15, 30 seconds of panic, I stop moving and just stand up, and the water only went up to my chest.
Stop it.
So I was doing all that work for nothing. And that was my kayaking experience.
That's now my what's good as well. I would pay money to see that. Someday, I'll get you in a canoe. I'm going to teach you how to stern.
I want to do it all.
I'll teach you how to feather your strokes, rudder with the paddle.
Please, I want to learn it all. I'm a boat guy now. I'm in tiny boats. That's my thing. But I love an adventure. And speaking of adventures, today we're discussing Zola. And of course, we'll answer a question from our hotline. And as always, we got some staff picks. And I don't think I left you out, Alonzo. I'm real excited for you to hear this staff pick, because of course, it's a classic film that I saw on an airplane on my way to...
The way it was meant to be seen.
But first, it's time for our new segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And of course, I'm kicking it off with my fellow tall daddy himself, Adam Driver. The Cannes Film Festival is happening right now, and one of the movies that's getting a lot of buzz, because we like buzz over in Cannes, is the new Adam Driver Marion Cotillard musical, Annette, directed by Leo Szyrak. In the official Cannes press pack interview for the film, Cotillard detailed how the singing in the film was actually very difficult. This is a quote. On most classic musicals, you record your songs in advance and then you do a playback on the set. But there, Leo wanted everything to be completely live. It added to the complexity of the set. We found ourselves singing in very complicated positions, doing back crawling or mimicking cunnilingus, acrobatic positions that technically modify your song, the way you sing. Is this important? Do you care?
There's so much here. First off, Marion Cotillard kind of gained recognition in the States when she starred in La Vie en Rose as Edith Piaf. And the idea of her combining that musical experience with this is very amusing to me. Like, I really like, I'm trying to picture her as Edith Piaf. Back crawling and mimicking cunnilingus as she sings. I want you to know that's the best of both worlds.
I think the mimicking cunnilingus part was Adam Driver.
But I'm already blending things. I'm making things up. Like, sure. Let my imagination run,
look, if any actors out there are, doing what every straight man should know, which is to sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star while you give head, so you know that you're spending enough time down there, you would have already mastered this art. So Adam Driver, the ball's in your court.
Oh my God. Can you see my blush over podcast?
I've seen several references online to the Alphabet song, and I'll let you just piece that together however you want.
I do. Weirdly, looking at Leos Carax makes me laugh that you that Alonzo's What's Good was about names, because Leos Carax is a nonsense anagram that he made for himself.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes. His name is like Alex Dupont. He's a French director. And he made his name as an anagram of Alex and Oscar, because he was like, I'm assuming he means like the Academy Award. And then he just sort of like mixed those up. And his, the film that I'm most familiar of his is Holy Rollers, which came
Holy
out.
Holy Motors.
Like, oh yeah. Thank you. Holy Motors, which came out like 10 years ago now. And it's so weird ball. So I'm like, oh, this is nothing. Like my expectations for the oddities that should hopefully be present in Annette are so far beyond, like even just tantalizing things of, oh yeah, we're singing while going down on people. That's nothing. I'm sorry. That is nothing compared to what level of just absurdity I'm hoping for and expecting.
If you've seen Holy Motors, seen Pola X, it's like, this is, you've there's a very high hill to climb here. It's, you know, this is the summer of sparks. You know, we had the Edgar Wright documentary, and then they did the music for this film, and it's going to be coming out in the States in August, and it's going to be in theaters and then on Amazon Prime so everybody can see it. And yeah, I'm sure it is cuckoo bananas, but that's what I want, and that's what I can't wait to see.
And that's also what I want for Adam Driver.
Oh, for sure.
Let Adam Driver be weird.
I mean, I love that. You know, I feel like this can be the new pipeline, because as we've seen with Elijah Wood and Daniel Radcliffe, them getting to do very weird movies after being parts of huge franchises.
Yeah.
Let it continue with Adam Driver. I want to see it. I want to see, I want pictures of him in a bathrobe and fuzzy slippers holding two weapons and people going, what movie is this for? And then it's like Guns Akimbo.
I always forget that Adam Driver was in the Star Wars movies. I think he's in, like, he's in everything, you know, like he's been in a Spielberg movie, let's not forget he was in Lincoln, you know, like he's become that guy that everybody calls, so you know, why not Leo Carax, you know.
All right, so next we have, with no segue, you guys, a hot little story about some truths from Colman Domingo, who is one of the stars in Zola that we're talking about today, as well as the upcoming Candyman sequel. And he was recently interviewed by the New York Times. In the interview, Domingo discussed his exhaustion with, quote, stories that are focused on Black trauma. According to Domingo, again, quote, focusing only on Black trauma perpetuates a narrative. That's the only way that the world sees us as being abused and victimized. I love what director Nia DaCosta had done with Candyman, which is that you never see any of the trauma on screen. You never see a Black body being brutalized. Is this important? Do you care?
Yeah, it's very important, considering how he brutalized my ear with that Nigerian accent, which we will get into. I won't fully trash it because, you know, Nigeria is big. There's many tribes, but it definitely wasn't Igbo. If he says it was Igbo, then he's lying. If he says it was Yoruba, then he was lying. But there are many tribes, but his performance is great because he's a phenomenal actor. And then I was trying to remember where he was. And it's funny because... me and my girlfriend came out and I was like, yeah, we saw him. And then I realized, yeah, we saw him in the Candyman trailer right before it. Like I was like, oh, that's where we saw him. But also he's great in Euphoria too. So we
saw him in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom that we talked about.
So I'm becoming a fast fan of Colman Domingo, doing anything but a Nigerian accent. But like
Colman Domingo also in Lincoln.
Oh, man.
Oh, nice. Here it is. Bring it in. Lincoln thread. I think that, you know, this is definitely a talking point that we've hit on before, and I feel like collectively this is something of import to us. I will speak for us as a team. But I think that having it like refreshed and brought up and personalized in stories is important. And honestly, there's also something like hearing that about Candyman. I wasn't apprehensive thinking of Candyman as like, but I'm also not someone who's braced and hurt in such a personal way when I'm seeing that trauma all over again. And I hope that him saying this in advance is something that could maybe like unlock something in potential audiences who like a comfort level of great, we're just going to see the normal kind of scares and carnage in a horror film and not a perpetuation of the violence against our bodies that happens on the news every day.
Oh yeah. No, I think it's super important to talk about this stuff. And it's great that so many creatives now, I think, are being really smart about, like, you know what, what if this time we didn't? Like, that's one of the things I really liked about Pose as it went along, was that you had people like Janet Mock and the other, you know, writers and directors basically being like, what if they don't get murdered? You know, what if they win? What if they succeed? What if they thrive? What if these trans characters, these trans women of color, like, get to have happy endings and full, complete, complicated lives, and that they just don't get killed all the time, you know? And so I admire the fact that people are sort of identifying this as a trope and as an easy fallback, and being like, let's not do it this time and see what happens.
And we'll talk about it definitely with funny enough Zola, because I think there's elements of that I do want to talk about, because I think there's ways that you can touch on it without even having to show it, and there's things you don't need to see. So I think this is a very important conversation, and once again, I think we're moving that way. I'm very excited to see where we go, and I do feel bad for some of the ones that have been in the pipeline before that memo was made, that are gonna come out and just be like, come on. I am of course talking about Them, which I do feel like was something that started before, you know, people were like, we're done with this.
It, to the credit of the pipeline, Barry Jenkins' Underground Railroad does a really beautiful job of,
for sure,
of what it's doing to depict a very real traumatic time in history without lingering on a particular kind of damaging violence.
And when it does depict it, it takes it so incredibly far that it's like,
yes,
this is not, no one is enjoying this. Like, this is absolutely about making a historical point, you know?
And that's kind of like the point I do want to, you know, in the end land on. I feel like there is a general idea that it's something that can't be touched on, but I think there is danger in not telling these stories. I think what happens is the saturation, oversaturation of these stories. And it's because there was a time where these were the only black stories being told. So I think we can have our black superheroes, black joy, black the stories, but I don't think we have to be afraid to tell these stories, especially when they come from a personal place.
So in a recent interview with Empire Magazine with Venom screenwriter Kelly Marcel, she revealed that Tom Hardy is actually getting his first story by credit on the upcoming sequel, Venom, Let There Be Carnage. According to Marcel, the two of them collaborated on the script for months. She says, we spent months breaking the story together on FaceTime, riffing on ideas, seeing what worked, seeing what didn't. Then I took everything we spoke about and holed up somewhere for 3 months quietly, knocking out a script. Marcel also said he's married to Venom. He loves this character. He's very involved in what he thinks should happen, unquote. Is this important? Do you care?
I adore Tom Hardy, and I love that the character that Tom Hardy is like, you know who I'm all in on? Venom. I love that for him. It's so dorky and pure.
An alien leotard.
I mean, and it is a really fun character that I think, like, I truly think Tom Hardy's so incredibly talented, and he did fun things with that first one. That first one was not the smoothest overall egg, but a fun enough watch.
It was the first time I was like, I can see this being its own world and can step, you know, much like Tyrese fails to mention the Marvel Sony cinematic universe or whatever the fuck.
The problem isn't that he fails to mention it, and that he mentions it incorrectly.
Yeah. Once again, that is the one time I'll give Tyrese a pass, because I too would be confused. It's like, well, you got to get a difference. Take Marvel out of it, but we'll see. I'm sure the mouse has their eyes on how they're gonna absorb this, you know, that's a whole longer conversation.
Yes, I am glad that we worked in Tyrese though.
Of course.
On the Tom Hardy tip too, I will say there's something, you know, a lot of actors, especially in a situation like this where it's a sequel, that's a character they've portrayed before, actors are so involved in the creation of their characters. And although there are many actors that I'm like, okay, settle down with you. There is something to be said of, you know, writing them off like they're just talking heads is also pretty unfair to the collaboration and creative process for so many projects. And Venom being such a big budget, such a major one, I think it's even more notable that they took the time to invest with this person and spend the time, give him a story by credit. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into the creation of what actors are doing, and it's more than just the lines in the moment. And yeah, anytime someone is feeling like they're maybe getting something they're owed credit wise, which is always so much more of an uphill battle than it should be.
Oh yeah,
I'm happy to see it.
Well, and you know, Tom Hardy did co-create the series Taboo, which I did not particularly care for, but nonetheless, he and his father Chips Hardy, which is one of my favorite names ever, co-created that show, which Stephen Knight then I think like did a lot of the writing and directing on. But yeah, you know, so he's clearly somebody who's sort of invested in a larger way of like making projects happen and getting involved, you know, on a level behind the camera as well. So, you know, look, am I counting the days until Venom 2 comes out? I am not. But, you know, why not? Why not let Hardy take a crack at it? No one else has really landed anything all that great so far in the one Venom movie and in the third Raimi Spider-Man, you know.
All right, well, with that being said, we're just going to take a break so we can hurry up and talk to y'all about Zola. So we'll be right back.
Schmanners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, schmanners. Get it?
Hey, how's it going? It's Iffy again. Look, before we get back into the episode, I just wanted to tell y'all about Storyblocks. Storyblocks is dedicated to being the world's best royalty-free stock media subscription service with an ever-growing library that has more than 1 million high-quality stock assets, including 4K HD footage, After Effects, and Premiere Pro templates, music, images, sound effects, and more.
They have affordable subscription plans and tools, and with Storyblocks unlimited all-access plan, you can get unlimited downloads of everything in their library. And even if your subscription ends, everything you've downloaded is yours to keep. Restock is an ongoing initiative to capture footage of those underrepresented in stock to increase diversity in stock footage.
So I say this a lot when I'm talking to upcoming filmmakers or students of mine or anyone who's just creating things. I think you get better with things the more you make. And the more you make, the more you want to improve. And one of the ways to do that is by integrating things like sound effects in building out the credits so that you have like beautiful images and using templates like Storyblocks has and using the footage that they have to sort of flesh out things that you maybe cannot afford as you're beginning. Or if you're just making something that's, you know, promotional or fun or whatever, and you just want it to look better and polished and improve your craft, this is a great access and a way to do that.
Yes, indeedy. So look here, buckle up and explore their library today at storyblocks.com/maxfilm. Once again, that's storyblocks.com/MAXFILM. Let's get back to this episode. Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Zola. Drea, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of this film?
Do you mean, do I want to tell you a little story about how me and this bitch fell out? Yeah, yes, I do. Please. Okay, so we meet Zola, who is a waitress in Detroit, who also works part-time as a stripper. And she encounters a young fellow stripper named Stephanie, who tells her about this magical place in Tampa where strippers go and can make thousands of dollars a night. So a day or two after meeting, she's like, all right, I'll go to Tampa with you, some strange man you say is your roommate, and your really weird boyfriend. Drives there with them. Hijinks ensue. Those hijinks get increasingly violent and ridiculous and sexual. And it's a lot. And the whole time, Zola is there ready to roll her eyes and tell us if people have sex and that it was gross. And yeah, and it is all based on a Twitter thread. There we go.
Yes. So I think the way I want to kick this off is first off just asking if either of y'all had read the viral Twitter thread.
Oh, before. Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember. So the Twitter thread was in 2015 by Zola. Her full name, I think it's Isaiah King. Mm-hmm. And so she wrote it, and it's a relatively true story. It was like 158 tweets or something like this long. But I remember catching it the night it came out because I kept having to check back in to see where it was because it was like unfolding. And it took like a while because she was typing it as she went. So, yes, I was very aware of it when it happened. And then subsequently, you know, we can talk about this, too. I was aware that initially James Franco got the rights to direct this. And was attached to it up until 2018, maybe, when his sexual assault accusations came out. So I was tracking this story for a minute. How about you, Alonzo?
I had not read them, and Dave has read them since we saw the movie, and I still haven't. But he was telling me that, if anything, the movie, like, for all of its sort of danger and grossness, like, soft pedals certain aspects of it, that you think this is a crazy story and you can't believe it's real when you're watching it on film. Oh, the real story is worse and more extreme. You're seeing the somewhat tidied up version here.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I was noticing. It was interesting watching it because, like, I saw the thread and I've read the thread many times. I even like read the response by Stephanie, who
Jessica. Like, Jessica. Her real name is Jessica. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've read the response and saw and looked up the pictures. Like, I was invested in Zola before it was the film. And I was interested because, you know, we always hear the story of like the movie based off of Twitter. And I thought it was really fun just how much they try to emulate the experience of reading the thread, because I feel like they took a lot of like phone elements. It really did feel like the phone aspect of it was still live in there, you know, with the time font being the exact same font as like a iPhone lock screen, the scenes that would go into where it's very obviously shot on an iPhone. And that I felt was a good way to adapt something.
The tweet like sounds.
This. Yeah, yes,
the tweet sounds.
And I'd actually like to, it sort of ties into something we were just speaking about, but in terms of crediting originators or looking at your sort of collaborative story process, normally for this kind of thing, and it's exactly what happened with this film, the rights for it weren't given or take, you know, like they weren't optioned from Zola. The rights were optioned from an article that someone wrote about this whole thing. In it, that guy had, like, he had interviewed the original Zola. He talked about the Twitter thread, the original Jessica, all of those, and sort of brought it. And that's what the production company optioned. And the fact that Isaiah King, and I'm again, hope that I'm saying her name correctly.
I assumed it was, but I'm saying the right way, but I assumed Asia.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's say Asia King, and then someone can correct us on the third way that we're doing it entirely wrong. But that the idea that she was brought on, she is credited in some way. I'm assuming she was hopefully monetarily compensated as well.
A24 has published the tweets in a beautiful hardcover edition as well.
And and that's not just good marketing, but again, there are so many cases of stories like this that are turned into films where that initial person is like got like a $500 thing maybe once from like somebody.
The guy who wrote the article that the first Fast and the Furious movie was based on, like, never saw a dime from any movie after that.
Yeah. So I credit this. And also I really want to shout out Janixa Bravo. Janixa is an Afro-Latina director. This is her second feature. She's had a bunch of shorts that I've been happy to program at a variety of film festivals, but she's incredibly talented and has a really unique eye in terms of, I think she, like the, what she brought to this and that she partnered with Jeremy O'Harris. Thank you. That she partnered with Jeremy O'Harris, the playwright, and their longtime friends. I feel like it was such a great intersection of talent and interest and the sort of both compassion and passion to bring to this of how this movie presents sex work and who this story is centered around. Like, I feel like if this was a movie from the 70s, what these women go through would have been a scene that was happening behind the gangsters, and we never would have heard about it. Do you know what I mean? Because there's like a couple really ugly happenings. And it's there's a really unique thing here, too, where Zola, who's our Black female protagonist, is watching this white woman who has this insane Black accent. She's appropriating on like a million levels, from hair to nails to clothes to accent to whatever. She's doing so many strange things. Like, to me, the hate crime that is her perfect accent is like in me for the rest of my life. But there's something there of the white woman who's doing that and taking that on and how she's viewing sex work, and then how our Black female protagonist is looking at Jim. It's just such a nuanced take in it. I find it so fascinating above and beyond what a wild ride the story is.
Yeah, there are a lot of gazes here, I think, in terms that the Janixa Bravo is bringing to it in terms of how a woman presents what stripping and sex work looks like and what it feels like to the people who are involved in it. But also, yeah, the racial appropriation issues, the social media of it all, you know, in terms of just the way that this whole thing unfolds. It is, on the whole, kind of a Shaggy Dog story, but then that's what they're adapting, you know, so you just kind of roll with that. And I think a lot of it really comes down to the central four performers who are just like all really nailing it. I mean, I'm a big Taylor Page fan, but, you know, like Riley Keough and Coleman Domingo and Nicholas Braun, you know, are just all being like funny and horrifying. And, you know, I mean, Taylor Page is just giving a gasp so well.
Yeah, it's so solid. I did want to touch on like the gazes, right? I think Janixa definitely came into this movie with something to say, because I feel like the Blacks and element is something that's kind of newer. Like, when you look at the original photo of like Zola, I'm sure like there definitely was some elements of her having the Black scent, but it really didn't read through in the original telling of it. And I felt like this was an opportunity, and there were a lot of opportunities taken here. And that was really fun, because it was fun to see just how it evolved, where like when they first met and became fast friends, it was great. And then spending this extra long time with it, you can see it kind of sink in that it's like, oh, this isn't good. Nothing is good. Also, it was interesting, like, watching this, I have to realize that I knew everything that was coming, because I read the thread multiple times. But I really did like the visual storytelling. Like, something that was a real gritty that I really enjoyed was the bathroom scene, and just seeing like the darkness of Stephanie's pee versus, you know, Zola. It's like that was a story in itself that was like,
somebody needs to drink more water.
Exactly. It was like, it just lets you. And I was like, oh, this is interesting, because if you don't know the story, then you would see, you know, the Stephanie person as like, oh, maybe she is good. And that is a way to kind of hint to you that, no, she has some darkness in her, not just her pee.
Amazing. Yeah,
as somebody who didn't read it beforehand, like, there are moments in this where I was just like, oh God, this is, and the only thing that kind of kept me going was like, well, she did write this, so I guess she comes out of it okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, and that was kind of like my one kind of like, you know, nitpicky thing about it, because, you know, in the thread, when you're reading it, you know, through Zola's eyes, she's kind of a fly on the wall in a way. Like, she's seeing it through, she's there for the story. It doesn't seem like she's definitely like, this situation is messed up, but it doesn't feel like, I feel like the movie had her forced into it. And like, I think the relationship between her and Coleman's like character was like, to me, that ended up making me want a kind of like triumphant resolution, other than like, well, that just happened. I guess it's just also the nature of the medium, where it's like someone tweeting, they're telling you about it, we know they're alive, so you kind of have this like comfort in knowing like, okay, they make it out. And in the Twitter thread, you just kind of go till you're done, where in a movie you kind of do want a little more of a boat.
You're normally like, okay, is she gonna steal a gun from somebody?
You want an ending and not just a stop. Another little detail about this movie that I really appreciate is the road trip aspect of it. Like, there is, this movie really kind of captures that feeling you have when you're like, you're going on a long car trip, but the world is just the vehicle that you're in, you know, and how great that can be, but also how terrible that can be if you're stuck in a car with like awful jerks. And there's just that sense of that box, that bubble that they're traveling through, that both the good and the bad of it, that the movie really, I think, gets that feeling in a way I haven't really seen in a lot of other movies.
Yes, I totally agree. I mean, I guess the thing I would most compare Zola to in that would be the Muppet movie.
Oh, sure.
When Kermit and Fozzie are in the Studebaker, traveling. Yeah. I'm sure we're not the first people to compare Zola to the Muppet movie, though, so fair enough.
I've never seen the sun come up in the west.
Is that a fork in the road? Yeah. I guess my other thing with this would be what, and it's actually, I'm noticing producer Casey was on this. This is a movie that is tricky to say what the genre is, because I laughed out loud so many times in this movie, right? There's so much in it that seems like big and comical. There's the road trip parts, but there's also like a grittiness and a darkness to their reality. But some of it seems very owned, and there's no shame or, you know, sort of dark motivation. It's just, this is their job. And then there's some of it that's like, oh, that's gross. And it's so layered in. Like, you know, you get to see all, oh, you guys, just the array of flapping dong that I've always wanted to see. And having that
montage,
right? Like the dong montage, but that's coming as I'm like, oh God, she has to have sex with all these gross men. And what must that feel like? And blah, blah. But I'm also having a parade of floppy dong in a very comical way. So I think it balanced all these tones, but I don't know how I would necessarily easily describe it. Do you guys?
You know, I mean, it's like one of those movies where like, I mean, like in a way, you know, I think about Bonnie and Clyde, which sort of starts out as this kind of like, ooh, we rob banks romp, you know, and then by the end of it, it's just like, you know, gets very intensely, you know, dramatic and violent and horrifying. And so, yeah, it does sort of like, I'm not saying it's Bonnie and Clyde, but
I want us on a poster where we compared Zola to Bonnie and Clyde and the Muppet movie. Exactly.
I think it threads that needle through a lot of different things in a really interesting way.
So for our final review of Zola, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
I'm a screen it for this. I love this film. I think there's so much talent here in so many directions, so much thoughtfulness. I think it's timely, and it's both trying to say a lot and bring attention to a lot of things, but it also has no messaging. As strange as that thing, I think it lives safely in that sort of sweet spot. And I very much enjoyed this. I'm very excited to see what Genixa Bravo does next. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a screen it. I think this is a film that's rich visually and it's rich in ideas, and it like I said, it kind of may feel at times that it's sort of lurching around from thing to thing, but it does so in a way that just sort of feels the way that life does. And it's a movie that I find I've been thinking about a lot ever since seeing it. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm going to screen it as well, because not only was this shot beautifully, not only was I like the ode to like the old classic title cards, like that really felt good seeing on the big screen. Also, there's a lot of shaking booties in there. We can't let that go. Also, the hugest dick I think I've seen captured on cinema. So there wasn't no way we were getting past the review without, I was like, God damn.
Whoever made the Mark Wahlberg prosthetic for Boogie Nights should just like think about what they've done, because this movie shows you that
they should hang up their mold.
Basically. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll take a break after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Hey, you like movies? What about coming up with movie ideas over the course of an hour? Because that's what we do every week on Story Break, a writer's room podcast where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to come up with a pitch for a movie or TV show based off of totally zany prompts.
Like that time we reimagined Star Wars based on our phone's autocomplete.
Luke Skywalker is a family man and it's Star Wars, but it's a good idea.
Okay, how about that time we broke the story of a bunch of Disney Channel original movies based solely on the title and the poster?
Okay, Sarah Hyland is a 50-foot woman. Let's just go with it, guys.
Or the time we finally cracked the Adobe Photoshop feature film.
Stamp tool is your Woody, and then the autofill is the new Buzz Lightyear.
Join us as we have a good time imagining all the movies Hollywood is too cowardly to make. Story Break comes out every Thursday on Maximum Fun. I don't know why I'm using this voice now.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Drea Clark.
And today we're answering a question from our hotline. So Casey, play that call.
Hey, it's Drea and Alonzo. First, thank y'all so much. Now that it is getting warmer, at least on the East Coast, I always get in the mood to watch some of my favorite up all night movies like Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist and Booksmart. But I always need more, and I always love these movies so much, and they always like fill me with a sense of joy and euphoria and summer warm times. So do you have any recommendations for any good up all night movies for the summer? Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you for that call while you're on the run.
I want to shout out that they said Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, because I love that movie and I feel like I'm always surprised if people haven't seen it. It's so fun. Ari Gaynor is like one of the best comedic performances in that. Just playing this drunk girl wandering around the city. Found it so lovely. So yes, thank you for including that in your references.
Yeah, this is a fun genre. I like, there are a lot of movies like this that I think like sort of the twin classics would probably be, you know, American Graffiti and Dazed and Confused, very much inspired that idea of like one night where everything and nothing can happen at the same time, and you know, where it just sort of seems to stretch out in front of you, and you know, people will cross paths and hang out that they never would have under normal circumstances, but there's some sort of like Midsummer Night's Dream thing happening where they're just sort of like tossed together and let's see what happens, you know.
Dazed and Confused is one of my favorites. It was like a movie that I fell in love with in high school. It's the first movie I remember my brother and I agreeing on past puberty, beyond whenever we aged out of like the Disney films we liked. We both found things to like in Dazed and Confused. I am a fan of the all night movies. I love the wonder and that sense of possibility Alonzo's talking about. But when it comes to like the madness of an all night movie, After Hours is obviously like the gold standard. Yes. Did Andrea Diane Clark just pick a Martin Scorsese flick? She did. Thank you. But I love that one. And it's so fun and manic. It is not fun in the same way. Like, ooh, I wish I was at, I wish I could party at the Moon Tower. Like Dazed and Confused. You don't want to be living this man's life.
It's fun in that Zola way of like, oh, what's going to
exactly,
happen next?
Exactly.
You know, I'll say, dude, where's my car? You know, yeah, some throwbacks. You remember that? Y'all remember
that's,
that?
Although that's, to be fair, as
that's
someone
more
who,
the day after, right?
I was going to say, yeah. I weirdly, my when I lived with my friend Jubba, yes, I did. Jubba and I owned a VHS of Dude, Where's My Car? We watched that thing like twice a week. I don't know. I've seen that movie so many times. And yes, as Alonzo said, I don't think that's an all night. They're flashing back to an up all night movie, but the majority of the action, I'll still accept it because I'm thrilled you brought it up.
Yeah.
Thrilled. That's also the movie where I believe Jennifer Garner and Marla Solikoff play twins. Because you know, who looks more alike than Jennifer Garner and Marla Solikoff? Solikoff,
is that Hollywood
Sokolov?
Magic?
Sokolov, maybe.
Sokolov, yeah. You guys, we've actually discussed a very fun up all night movie, Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Before Sunrise.
Yes, different kinds of fun.
Yes, we've discussed both of these.
We have. We do love an all night movie, Adventures in Babysitting. A much more ridiculous, but truthfully, I would rather spend my night wandering around and discovering Vincent D'Onofrio dressed as Thor than I would watching a couple argue in Berlin or whatever.
Vienna, I think.
Vienna, yeah.
This is a movie that I feel like I like more than a lot of other people, and I don't know, it just sort of hit me the right way, but I really liked South Side with You, which was the movie about the Obamas' first date. Not because I'm, you know, obsessed with the Obamas. I just thought, like, just in watching this sort of like couple kind of like do that first date thing of sort of sussing each other out and kind of figuring out who each other is, who they are themselves, and the fact that it sort of spreads out into this evening and, like, you know, culminates with them going to see Do the Right Thing on their first date. I don't know. I like the way that it's sort of like it is this sort of technically a historical drama, but it just sort of shambles very amiably through this evening and these two people who are bright and interesting and, you know, into each other, but not entirely sure if they want to pursue that or not. And I don't know. I just think it's a lovely film. The Tika Sumter and Parker Sawyers are great in it. So that's one that I like a lot.
I do like that. I like this as a summer movie concept.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was a real
especially for a bunch of people who were bunkered down for the last year. That was a great question.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thank you so much for calling in. And, you know, as always, if you want to submit a question or voicemail, you can call us on the hotline at 979-803-1664 or email us at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Thank you to everyone that submitted a question. Now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Alonzo, why don't you start?
Well, you know, it's our good friends over at Tubi again, just like finding the oddest stuff and things that you thought, movies that you thought maybe you dreamt once and weren't even sure that you saw, but they are currently streaming the 1989 comedy directed by actor Bob Balaban called Parents, which is a horror movie about a kid in the 50s who's being raised by seemingly normal, average American suburban parents played by Randy Quaid and Mary Beth Hurt. But he is convinced that these strange-looking leftovers that they serve for dinner every night are human remains. And as one critic pointed out, you know that this child lives in a terrifying universe when the one person he has to turn to is played by Sandy Dennis. This is a really great, weird, dark comedy about sort of 1950s, you know, conformity and you know, the notion of, you know, that sort of post-war idea that, like, you know, chemistry and advertising would save us. It's a twisted little movie that has a definite cult, but I think a lot of people have never seen it, never heard of it. And so I just want to bang the gong a little for Parents. It's on Tubi, free with ads. Check it out. You will not soon forget it.
Are you kickstarting?
Tubi strikes again.
Are you kickstarting a Balabanissance?
Why not?
Right, what you got for us, Drea?
All right. I also have a horror film, a horror comedy that is currently available for rent called Werewolves Within. Just watched that this weekend. I think it just came out last week. It stars Sam Richardson, whom I adore, and Milana Weintraub, but it is packed. It's a very small cast, and a lot of it has that sort of Agatha Christie, oh, we're all in one house and one of us is the killer, except for the killer is probably maybe a werewolf. It's super funny. The comedic timing is incredible. I was looking at it amazed. I was just trying to budget it the whole time because it looks so much better than this kind of movie ever does. Cheyenne Jackson's in it. Harvey Guillen, whom I love from... he plays Guillermo on What We Do in the Shadows, the TV version. Michaela Watkins is in it. It's just so funny. And it's one of those horror films that is... There's some gore in it, but it's mostly for comedic effect. This is not, if you are a horror wuss, you're going to be fine with Werewolves Within.
I keep hearing great things about this. Sam Richardson is also terrific in The Tomorrow War, but The Tomorrow War is not terrific, and do not see it.
Okay. Well, let's go way back in the time. Let's go as far back as 1948.
What? Iffy. Yeah. What did you banger, watch?
Banger.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait. By... Are you resetting up that this is a film that you definitely watched on an airplane?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. You know, good. Okay.
Just as John
it's pre-CinemaScope. I can't complain about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as John Huston would have liked it,
Huston!
As I saw
Houston, man. Houston. Houston. Stop it. That was
okay. Well.
Drea, let him finish.
I'm sorry.
Yes. You know,
I'm on pins and needles.
None other than our favorite Humphrey Bogart, Walter Houston, Tim Holt, Bruce Bennett. Yes, of course, I'm talking about the treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Wow.
Something that would have been great to see before Da 5 Bloods. I would have understood what was being referenced and done. But you know what? I saw it in due time as far as my memory served, I figured that Humphrey Bogart was always the good guy. But in this one, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah,
very much. And he's often not the good guy.
Oh, he's, because that's always he's like Humphrey Bogart. And I'm like, okay, he's the guy. But
the Sam Spade stuff. He's like the reluctant good guy, but he's an interesting.
Yeah, he can be the heel for sure. So, did you know that that's where We Don't Need No Stinking Badges came from?
Yeah, here's the thing. I heard that line and I was like, this is where people are, because I've heard this so many times. I was in an improv tournament where someone was called the We Don't Need No Stinking Badgers, and so I'm like, this goes way back. But it was it was funny.
It's famously called back in Blazing Saddles. It starts there.
Yes. Oh man. So really, it was great. I mean, it's a classic film, so I don't have to really win you over. It's a classic film for a reason.
No, but the fact that you said it, I'm excited, and I hope wherever she is listening right now, Ingu King is enjoying the smelling salts she required after you saying that was your staff pick.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you do us proud.
Can't wait to write this up on Letterboxd, to let the people know what I really think. So tune in for that.
And if you want more Tim Holt, check out Orson Welles' The Magnificent Ambersons.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
But you can call him Orson Wheels if you want.
Okay, well, if you look at how Houston's
spelled. I'm just kidding.
You would know it's... And the whole time I was like, okay, I got to remember this name. You got to see what other Huston flicks. Little did I know. All right.
He's Angelica's dad.
I was going to say he's Angelica Houston's dad.
All right. There you go. Hollywood nepotism.
Everybody's learning stuff today. What an educational
Jack
lesson.
Jack Houston's grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
and Walter's son.
All right. Alonzo Andrea, thanks for another great episode. Thank you for your time, your patience, your guidance. Any final words before we take this ship in for a landing?
Could you help out a fellow American in need?
Yeah, I cackled when he came to that same guy for the third time. I was like, bro, there's so many other people. What are you doing? Oh, wow. Well, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer, who is great, patient, looking out for me, thinking of the things that I need to know so I can read them correctly off the script, is none other than good old boy Casey O'Brien. And of course, the wonderful, lovely Laura Swisher is our senior producer. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.